In 1934, Henry Grob, not to be confused with the chess master of the same name, and Theodore Jones were exploring in their backyard in Baltimore one afternoon. While digging around in the backyard, they discovered something buried there. Once it resurfaced, it would be a treasure unimaginable. 5,000 golden coins is what they found, summing up to be worth over $10 million in today's currency. But how did it get there? And why was it there? All this and more will be answered in this week's episode of Mulder Was Right. Stay tuned. Welcome to Mulder Was Right. I am your host, Brendan, and I am joined by my lovely friends. I'm glad to be back. Who are you guys?
I'm Brandon.
I'm Marina.
Curtis.
All right. Welcome back. I'm glad to be back, guys. Thanks, guys, for holding down the fort, the bunker, while I've been gone. That's really a bad bit.
It's a good bit.
I don't know why.
You're so wrong.
I don't know if that's true.
What bit? Like, what bit are you talking about? I don't understand.
The bunker bit. But anyway.
So how
are you guys doing?
Brendan,
what?
Welcome back to the bunker.
Thank you. I mean, yeah. How have you guys been while I've been gone?
Well, they got me. Hi.
We recruited someone to the bunker. Hi, Marina.
But don't read into it too much. She just appeared one day.
Okay.
I just washed up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, from the sea.
For sure.
That's our second bit.
Good. All right. So today, as you heard in the intro, we're going to be talking about these two kids who found these 5,000 golden coins in a basement. They were, like, buried there. So, yeah. Starting off with that, what do you guys feel with that?
I wish that I had 5,000 gold coins that were $10 million worth.
Right, yeah, that sounds like...
That's how I feel.
This sounds like some fairy tale nonsense. Like, just go to the basement and suddenly... Did you say basement? Did I make that up?
Is it their basement?
Basement
is correct.
Is it their basement?
Did they break into somebody's house?
So they lived in like a tenement.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Like a group living situation. So they went into a basement.
The story wasn't clear that I was reading if it was their basement or just a building in the tenement's basement, but they were in a basement. They, you know, had like an axe and a corn knife, and they just went to town and digging around one afternoon and found 5,000 golden coins in a box that had been buried there for quite some time.
Now, and did they intend to find something? Were they just digging around?
Yeah,
were they like, I got my corn knife, I'm gonna dig?
They were like young kids. They were like 12 years old or something.
Sure.
So they were just digging around, just like digging just to dig.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Just those days, digging holes.
I mean, that's what 12-year-old kids do in 1934. They just dig.
Yeah.
That movie we
Digging
saw
holes.
Yesterday.
Yeah, Curtis and I just saw Stand By Me last night, and there's some shit like digging holes in that movie. They don't dig holes, but they do dig around a lot.
And they search for that dead body.
Yes.
What?
Yeah, I've seen the movie. Have you not seen Stand By Me?
Four young boys decide, like, this boy's been missing all summer, and one of them is like, I know where it is, and so they go looking for it because they're like, yo, let's go see a dead body. That's dope, because that's what young boys do. But they also have some emotional moments.
Oh, this is Stephen
moments.
King.
It is a Stephen King story,
okay.
Yes.
Yes, based I do know this. Body. Okay. Yeah.
Anyway, tangent, sorry. So, what
anyway,
are their names again,
so
boys?
What?
What are the names?
Well, they are incredibly irrelevant to most of the story today. They are just the introduction. We're going to talk about those 5,000 golden coins and why they existed and why they were there. But for your to answer your question, Henry Grob and Theodore Jones were the two. And once again, Henry Grob, not to be confused with the chess master of the same name. Inventor of the move Grob's attack, which is moving the pawn in front of your knight two spaces forward.
I see you did some Googling of Grob recently.
As the first move. It's an opening move. What?
You did some Googling of Grob recently.
Yeah. Yeah. I Googled to see if either of these two people went to go do anything with their life. I didn't come up with any of them. So
it does seem if they had $10 million.
Yeah. I mean, once they hit their 21st birthday, they were able to, each of them got half. So
I see, like somebody put it in a trust for them and they didn't get it until later. Yeah, sure. That's a really responsible adult thing to do.
Yes.
12-year-olds find some money.
But anyway, so let's talk about why there were golden coins in a basement, also like buried there. So our story begins in the year 1823. George W. L. Bickley was born in Indiana. Now, who was George W. L. Bickley? Well, he lived an adventurous life as a doctor, writer. But his largest claim to fame was a creation of a secret society originating in the year 1854.
Okay.
Now,
getting saucy.
For whatever reason, all of his biographies kept saying that he lived an adventurous life, but I never actually got any details on what his adventures were. So I'm really bummed about that. I really wanted to know what Bickley, doctor, writer, creation of a secret society. I really wanted to know what his adventurous exploits were. Like, I was really hoping he was going to be like Indiana Jones and like he discovered these coins, but that's not in fact what happened. So Bickley here, he created an organization that was meant to get the southern slave states a little bit more strength in the Union, because in 1854, the tides were changing. You know, things were moving. The Republican Party, the first Republican Party
Lincoln's
nominee
party.
And president-elect was Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
So that sort of side of things was growing. You know, they were getting a lot of support, whereas the southern states, they weren't getting a lot of support. they were kind of getting pushed out. And as we know, you know, with the election of Abraham Lincoln, and the, Emancipation Proclamation and all that stuff, you know, South didn't really like that. That led to the Civil War. But before we get there, this organization was created. The thought that Bickley had was that if they created the society, they could then use the strength of the group and the society to annex additional states as slave states, and then they could hold much more power.
This guy was a full-on supervillain.
Yeah. but what were the states that they were trying to annex? Please look at the map that I sent you. These are the territories that they were trying to annex.
All the green.
Oh my god!
There's going to be an image on our website for all of our listeners, so you guys can take a look at what we are looking at here. This is the Golden Circle. This is a proposed country slash nation to be added to the United States. As you can see in the picture, the darker green areas are the places that they were trying to conquer and acquire, whereas the lighter green area is the rest of the United States at the time.
Yeah, so that's most of the continental United States and then Central America.
So once again, for those of you who are listening and not looking at the image, they were trying to annex the entirety of Mexico, splitting Mexico specifically into 25 additional slave states. They were going to annex the entirety of Central America as well, and specific parts of South America, Cuba, and the entire Caribbean. The reason why it's called Golden Circle was, I believe that if you like pick a point like in Cuba or like I believe the center point is Havana, and so if you draw a radius around that, that would be the Golden Circle encompassing all of that.
This is so crazy. Yeah.
So that was their thought, and now. With having, you know, the name the Golden Circle, clearly this organization has to have a pretty kick-ass name.
Lay it on me. Well,
the organization was called the Knights of the Golden Circle. KGC for short.
How did you describe that name?
How did you describe it? I think I said it had to be a pretty kick-ass name.
It's not. It's bad. Now, it's...
Hold on. Guys, you were thinking about this as if it's like, you know, 2018. This was like 1850s right here.
I don't know, man.
Like what's
back
cooler?
Then, even back, if someone came
what's
up
cooler
to me,
than Knights?
Even in the 1800s, if someone came up to me and was like, hey, do you want to be part of the Knights of the Golden Circle? I would run away.
Well,
yeah.
Until they told you what they wanted to do, and then you'd be like, yo, I like slaves. Let's do it.
Wow. Wow. That's...
I'm kidding. You're not a slave owner. You don't... sympathize with this worldview. I'm just saying, you're right. They're not a very savory group.
Right.
So
yeah, I guess there's multiple
Knights
reasons
of the,
to run.
So the Knights of the Golden Circle. As I said before, this organization predated the Confederacy, which, you know, soon once the Confederacy happened, they then joined up in the Confederacy because most of the people that were, you know, parts of the Knights of the Golden Circle were also just like living in the South. So they then just added themselves to that. This is one of the more successful Southern sympathizer groups that have existed throughout history, though. Like they did a lot of stuff, and we're going to talk about that. So with the Knights of the Golden Circle, clearly they needed castles, right?
Please, are you?
Oh my god,
Brendan, are you
clearly they needed castles?
Please show us some castles.
And the first castle was created in Cincinnati in 1954. So the first castle is basically just branches of this organization. Unfortunately, it's not real castles, but, you know, knights, they live in a castle, they protect the castle.
Of course, and so the Knights of the Golden Circle called their headquarters castles?
Do you think it was a
barn?
Did
they really do that?
They did. They really did do that. I'm not making this up.
And it was in Ohio. Was Ohio a slave state?
It was like there were a lot of northern states that were like they were like southern sympathizers.
Yeah,
so
totally.
As we get deeper into the topic, there's a lot of like if you're in the north, and like people accused people of being part of the Knights of the Golden Circle.
Wow.
But we'll get into that a little bit later. Okay. So castles begin to appear all over the South, including places like Texas and Louisiana. Texas's division would become one of the largest, having 21 different castles in the state, and they armed over 4,000 knights.
I'm upset. This sounds better than, because you're saying like 21 castles in Texas, but like if it's just headquarters, if it's not a castle, like they could just be talking about a stack of hay, a barn.
Well, it's
a shed.
It's more of like local branches. Like, you know how you have and this is terrible, but you know how they have like organization, like branches of like the KKK in other places, or like,
yes,
or like better sounding, you know how they have branches of like Rotary clubs. They have like Rotary clubs, you know, a bunch of different places, and and people like, you know, are a part of that. And so this is just, you know, local Rotary clubs or local castles that just existed.
Sure.
And then basically they would do then events there. They had dues in order to be a part of it. It's heavily, it, I don't know when the KKK originated.
That's a good question.
I want to know if it, founded in 1866. So this predated the KKK as well. So they probably got a lot of their ideas from the Knights of the Golden Circle. And I mean, to draw more parallels, you know, they are called Grand Wizards and all that. So,
that's right.
Knights, Wizards.
Which is pretty wild. Yeah, no.
Yeah, I can see how they're
Wizards
like,
and Knights.
Yep.
Wizards and Knights, that's it. Merlin, you know, King Arthur.
Yeah. It always struck me as very strange that they were grand wizards and shit.
I know, it doesn't seem...
It's bizarre. So how are we feeling so far about the Knights of the Golden Circle?
I think they have a branding problem. It's down...
I second that.
It's down to their name and their whole shtick.
I mean, all I'm saying is that, like, you're saying this in 2018. I think that they have a cool name. I mean, like, the Freemasons were like a bigger secret organization at this time as well. Now, someday, at some point, we're going to talk about the Freemasons on this podcast, but who knows when that's going to be? But someday we will. But, like, you know, they're drawing inspirations from a bunch of different places, and, you know, like knights are the good guys, generally. So they're like, look, we're the good guys, we're fighting the good fight. Now, unfortunately, they weren't the good guys. Not unfortunately, more of unfortunately for them.
Yeah,
they weren't the good guys, but still.
I'm just saying they have a branding problem.
They do.
It doesn't sound like that hurt them very much. It sounds like they were pretty successful nonetheless.
I mean,
and I gotta say, boy, are they ambitious.
Yeah.
We're gonna conquer.
Oh my God.
The continental
universe. That's a bit of a walk.
Large parts of like the entirety of Mexico. Like,
the one portion where they don't have a branding problem is they found the exact middle of all that and then said, yo, but it's a circle around
right.
it. It's like pretty,
right.
that's pretty, that part of the name's pretty good.
Did someone like propose a square? And they were like, no.
Hey,
no, it
they
has
were like,
to
fuck
be.
Fuck you, George.
Yeah. They're like, needs to be
a circle.
Because golden square doesn't sound as good.
No, that sounds bad.
Nor does.
That sounds really bad.
Now, as you said earlier, I think this was, This was before the podcast, but Brandon earlier, when I told them to look up Golden Circle, he was like looking up like from the movie Kingsman. Is that?
No, don't tell me it's related.
And the second movie is what? What is it called?
It's called the Golden Circle.
Okay. Now I have no idea because I have not seen this movie. I saw the first one. I wanted to see the second one, but I didn't.
It's like an alternative history sort of shtick thing, right?
What?
like the first movie at least is kind of like an alternative history.
Yeah. So I have no idea if this is the same Golden Circle, but I really hope it is.
I bet it is.
Do you?
Well, it's just kind of funny.
Sure.
I think it's funny. Anyway, so let's talk more about what they actually did, because this was just like the, you know, basic sort of how they got started. So one of the funnier moments that occurred in relation to the Knights, but they didn't actually do any of this. Sam Houston, he was a unionist, and he proposed a movement for, and as I quote, for the United States to declare and maintain an efficient protectorate over the states of Mexico, Nicaragua, Costa Rica, Guatemala, Honduras, and San Salvador. Now, this guy was not a part of the Knights of the Golden Circle, but he basically proposed literally their mission statement that he wanted to protect all of those countries in the Golden Circle. Now, for whatever reason, the movement didn't pass. And so, he was probably very much supported of the Knights of the Gold, or by the Knights of the Golden Circle, did not pass. So I don't know how many of these people were actually like in seats of government, because you really can't, you know, it's a very underground organization. So
sure.
Obviously, this group of people did not like Abraham Lincoln, because, Abraham Lincoln was against slavery. So, and these guys were very much pro-slavery. So once Abraham Lincoln was elected in 1860, the focus of the Knights of the Golden Circle changed, and they began to help the South more and more as the brink of war started. Now, one of the more crazy things that happened was that Abraham Lincoln was supposed to go through Baltimore as the president elect. He was supposed to go through Baltimore to get to the White House, because he hadn't made it there yet, and traveling takes a lot more time back then than it did now. And so Baltimore had boasted having over 3,000 members in just that city alone of the Knights of the Golden Circle. And they were very much against him. So he was supposed to go through Baltimore, but Intel came in, and officials actually sent him away because they were scared that he was going to be killed if he went through Baltimore.
That's wild.
With all of these supporters, yeah. The tenement, the house that I talked about at the very beginning of the episode is in Baltimore.
Oh,
and
coming together.
And we'll get back to that in a bit. So the Civil War began in 1861. The movement focused on trying to level the playing field. So they were basically doing a bunch of like weird, like black ops type things. Like they were trying to like randomly like kill the president if he was anywhere nearby. They were like sending people north in order to just like wreak havoc, do all that type of stuff, as well as support the South the best that they could. Now, here's a little fact that I actually learned. While I was outside of the bunker, I actually went to a Civil War reenactment on the weekend.
Oh God!
Which is very much the inspiration of this episode. I wanted to talk about something related to the Civil War because I went to this reenactment. Which actually, by the way, it sounds funny. It's actually loads of fun to go to these events. I don't know why there are people who frequently want to relive fighting for slavery or fighting against slavery. I mean, I can see the fighting against slavery, but like in order to have the battle, you need people on one side and then people on the other.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right. That's my hesitation of this. Like reenactment, that's cool. But yeah, that awkward moment when you're deciding who's going to be on what side.
Yeah. For better or worse, plenty of people have like a lot of pride in the notion of their ancestors having fought for a cause, regardless of the greatness of the cause or lack thereof. Yeah, it's a tricky subject.
Do they pick teams like you would in like basketball at school? Is someone playing Robert E. Lee and someone's playing Ulysses S. Grant and they're like, okay, I get Jimmy.
I wish that was how that worked, but how it does work is that basically you join like local like groups, and then they have like a whole set up where you have like this local group, we're always fighting for the union. We are the 20th Maine Company, and that is, you know, that is our company. 20th Maine was actually one of the groups that we got to meet and talk to. They were super nice, really cool. In fact, I almost was able to get on the field and battle, which would have been amazing.
Nice.
But I did not actually get to. Here's one of the bizarre facts that I learned was that the union obviously was better funded. They had more capital, they had more money in the North, so they could basically just throw more money at their troops to do better. And they were much better with their hospital practices. You know, the Civil War was one of the bloodiest battles, and there were thousands of amputations that occurred on the battlefield, which is just absurd. I was like taught how like they do amputations, which just sounds gross because they're like reaching into your skin and like pulling muscles and like making a stump. And it's, but regardless, the South did have better dental care, which is a really bizarre fact.
I would not expect that.
So Jefferson Davis, wasn't always the big bad guy president of the South. He was like a senator in the government. And so one of the things that he was pushing for was to recruit dentists to basically work on soldiers' mouths, because he thought, you know, if my tooth doesn't hurt, I'm going to fight better. I mean, it's pretty sound logic.
You know, I can vouch for that, actually. If I have a toothache, I'm a huge baby, and I don't want to do anything. So, yeah. Perfect. I'm glad they had their priorities straight.
Yeah, so he recruited, a bunch of different dentists while he was president of the Confederacy to basically, you know, fix people's toothaches, which is very funny that they specifically have better dental. So also during the war, former President Franklin Pierce was extremely critical of Abraham Lincoln. He was accused of being a Knight of the Golden Circle by William H. Seward. Many others were also accused of being part of the Knights of the Golden Circle, including Lambden P. Milligan, who was thrown into prison because of this accusation. He was like a senator or something. Now, this time in the middle of the war, it was called the Golden Scare. And additionally, the practices that William H. Seward created was called Sewardism, the practice of making accusations of subversion or treason without proper regard for evidence.
what a nice name too, Sewardism. It just sounds slimy and gross. Now that's a man who knew his branding. He was like, right. I'm a slimy, gross motherfucker. Let's call it Sewardism.
I mean, that's just his last name.
Oh, was it Seward?
William H. Seward.
Seward. No T.
Seward.
Steward.
Regardless, I was hoping that you guys were going to. I was hoping that you guys were going to pick up on my joke. The Golden Scare did not exist. That was my play on the Red Scare.
And Sewardism also did not exist.
That was my play on McCarthyism.
No, I totally thought these guys would just stick the word golden in front of everything to make it sound
right.
Cool.
I was going to make a joke about how their branding was still on point.
Right. They're like, just make it gold and it'll be fine. Which, to be fair, is also,
that's also my motto. Brendan, you look so tired.
Anyway, so
did they have golden dentures?
The only thing that was real in that paragraph was Franklin Pierce was considered or was accused of being a Knight of the Golden Circle, as well as Lambdin P. Milligan, who also was thrown in prison because of this. I thought it was funny that there are very similar parallels between that time and in the basically just 100 years later. Where the Red Scare happened.
Right.
I thought it was funny to draw those parallels.
Really scared of Knights of the Golden Circle, which is...
Fair.
They're a scary bunch.
They are a scary bunch. So as I said before, you know, how does this story all relate back to the boys in the 1930s?
I have a question.
Are dentists part of this?
Dentists are not part of it. That was just a fun fact that I learned while at the Civil War reenactment. It was the largest Civil War reenactment in California, by the way.
It's incredible.
Yeah. And we'll talk more about that. I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about the Civil War reenactment and how interesting it is. But I want to get through all of this before I talk about my personal life on the podcast, because I know a lot of people are here for the conspiracies, and that's it. So let's get through this. So as I said, Baltimore had 3,000 members in their city alone. Now, Captain J. Madison, who was a slaver, realized that once the war began, he would have to they would have to hide a lot of the funds that they had raised in dues of the castles, in funds that they had raised, so they needed to store it away because it would soon, you know, if the North won, they didn't want all of this money or these you know possessions to be just left behind for the North to take. So they buried a lot of their money, and I want to point out that a lot of this money, a lot of these golden coins, they were used or they were meant to be used for Latin American expeditions. To happen after the war, but these expeditions never came to fruition, or else we probably would have heard about them. So this guy he buried these coins, and among the people who joined the Knights in Baltimore was none other than John Wilkes Booth.
Oh.
Whose name is very infamous in the Civil War because he happened to, in case somebody is confused on who John Wilkes Booth is, he was the one who murdered Abraham Lincoln in cold blood in the theater, Sixth Emperor Tyrannus. We do a whole episode on John Wilkes Booth and the assassination of Abraham Lincoln in episode 2. So if you want to listen to more about that, we talk about that in episode 2. But one thing that we actually missed was his relation to the Knights of the Golden Circle. Now, it is thought, with Abraham Lincoln, there were like many different attempts on Abraham Lincoln's life by Booth and by the Knights of the Golden Circle. There were many times where he like came to like talk to people, or he came through a city in which then they attempted to kill the president and everything. And eventually it all boiled up to this one event where he was able to kill him. And, you know, there were a bunch of people in that group, and they had talked like in house, they had planned in those locations that were related to the Knights of the Golden Circle.
It's really, really wild.
Yeah, I always imagine the assassination as a one-off thing. I didn't realize it had been like a long plan. Many attempts. Many tries.
Many
and
attempts.
They just finally
many
got
failed
one.
Attempts.
They just finally did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's...
So John Wilkes Booth had lived just a block away from this same house where the boys found these 5,000 gold coins.
Okay.
This is the same house where Madison had lived and potentially had buried the money. Now, I couldn't in my research figure out who actually buried the coins in this house. I couldn't figure that out. But there were a bunch of different players in this time who lived in this house that were part of the Knights. One of them was... after the war, Madison sold the home to Andrew Salisbury, a Southern sympathizer and fellow knight. So he had sold the home. Now, I have no idea if the home was owned, or sorry, if the money was buried at that time, or if Salisbury knew about it, or if he was the one who buried it. I don't know. I do have it written that it is assumed that Salisbury knew about the treasure, and many of his brothers in arms knew about it as well. So it seems as though he did know about the treasure. And in this particular treasure, they were given one clue. And with the last dying breath of Salisbury's he muttered to his daughter one line: "The secret lies with Charlotte." Now, she didn't think of anything about this, she testifies in court, during the trial of who is the rightful owner of the money. Like she came and testified as an old woman. She testified about the treasure. Now who would have known that a simple clue, "The secret lies with Charlotte," would lead to some sort of national treasure to have been discovered by
I'm just saying, Brendan, nice Nicolas Cage reference.
Yeah, you did it. Yeah. a good one.
I think you also missed the National Treasure reference that had just occurred earlier as well. You guys are missing all my references. The Secret Lies with Charlotte was not a clue that was given. Basically, all of these guys just forgot about the treasure. They just forgot that they buried money.
I was hoping that's what happened.
And then everyone forgot about it. And then these kids were just snooping around, digging around, doing what kids do in 1934 on a Friday afternoon, just digging around, doing whatever, with an axe and a corn knife. And they just found 5,000 gold coins.
Yeah, can we do the whole walkthrough? So Abe's coming through town, or no, that wasn't it. They're worried about someone coming to town, right? There's a bunch of old racist white men, right? They have their knights. They go to the castle. They're like, "Guys, we gotta all this money we raised for the castle, for our great
our trip. Imperialism.
Our imperialism, right? Which we're never gonna do, because Jesus, I mean, like, travel was hard. Like, wouldn't it just be? I imagine it's exhausting just to go across town back then, let alone go to fucking South America. Okay, so they have the gold for this grand thing that's never gonna happen. They panic, bury the gold, and then everyone just forgets the gold there was there.
There was a lot of other. There were a lot of other treasures that were also uncovered in various parts of the South. For instance, they found gold coins very similar to the ones that they have here, buried under some hotel as well. And there's a bunch of different of these sites where people just found gold coins just in their homes or like under hotels or like under public landmarks, because people buried them there, didn't tell anyone, and then forgot about it or died.
I love that there is literal treasure scattered across the United States because a bunch of white people panicked.
I mean, the thought is that they're losing the war. They lose this war. The North is going to come through and, you know, make all of these people who you know, fought in the war, they're going to make them pay, you know, for all of these issues that they had. And so they then are like, all right, so we're going to take this treasure because, you know, you guys have to pay for what you did. And they don't want these treasures to become in the hands of the North. So they just bury it, and they're like, all right, you know, 2 years from now, we're going to uncover this treasure, and then we're going to use it to fund our, you know, imperialistic ways to conquer the entirety of Mexico. Well, 2 years came around, nobody remembered that. They were living life through whatever else they wanted to do, and treasure stayed there until everyone died.
Crazy. But a fitting end to the Knights of the Golden Circle. And Brendan, you're going to tell me that's the end of the Knights of the Golden Circle, right?
Well.
Ah.
No, it is. No, that is the end of the Knights of the Golden Circle.
Okay,
they
great.
They're a very short-lived organization. They started in... was it 1950 or 1854? They ended, they stopped meeting, they stopped doing things. And I believe it was 1865, just after the war had
ended. That's not a long time.
Short-lived, but, you know, all I'm saying is that there are a lot of Southern sympathizer groups. Did any of them kill a president? This one did. So I'd say that's pretty successful.
This one did indeed.
If that was their goal, it's really terrible that Abraham Lincoln did die. I just want to make that clear. I'm not making jokes at his expense. But you know, this
it is impressive for this upstart who wants to conquer a lot of the northern hemisphere, the side of the pond. To kill a president. It seems like maybe they would have been able to do what they were trying to do if they had really gotten some traction, which is a scary thought.
Which is a very scary thought, because you know, like, I'm sure that the Knights of the Golden Circle, as I said earlier, the KKK was founded in 1866. Well, that is a year after the Knights of the Golden Circle ended. So I'm sure a lot of these guys moved right into the KKK.
Right.
I'm sure they
probably
did. And turned stupid and less ambitious.
And never went back for that gold.
Yeah. By the way, saw Black Klansman. Highly recommend. Everyone go see Black Klansman.
You need to watch it. Yeah. Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah. Also, Sorry to Bother You is incredible. I think I might have said something about that recently.
Yeah,
anyway.
Yeah, you have.
Okay, sorry.
I have not seen any of these movies. I'm just thinking, I'm just full of regret for being 12 and never just taking a fucking pickaxe to my basement floor. It's like, Yeah, that's. I still have questions about these kids. Like, I think if someone walked in on me, even at 12, especially at 12, actually, that's you're old enough to not do that, and you're just going to town on your floor and like busting up foundation. I think you'd get beat.
Well, there probably
wasn't
interested,
foundation, right? Like it was just dirt.
If you're interested in more information into this topic, because this is just a taste, basically, that story is kind of just a sub-note to what I wanted to talk about today. I mostly wanted to talk about the Knights of the Golden Circle, but I thought it would be a fun sort of entrance to this. But if you want to learn more about their case, because they did go to court, and they were, like, fighting the landlord on who is the person to own the treasure, because these kids found it, but the landlord didn't know it was there. So they were, you know, fighting this legal battle against them. And then, as I said, they won. But if you're more interested in this, I have a link to basically the synopsis of the whole legal battle, as well as there is a book that you can buy. Called Knight's Gold, that really goes into the background of the Knights of the Golden Circle, how the gold got there, and the legal battle ensuing. So if you're more if you're interested in that, you can read the book.
Incredible.
I want them to make a movie about this, and the movie would feel very similar to like Holes, where you have like flashbacks of these characters. Yeah.
Or anyway, they could just make a new National Treasure movie.
Right. The third
one has been in the works for years and years and years, but it has not gained traction. National Treasure movies are very much a guilty pleasure of mine.
Yeah, National Treasure movies are good. They're good.
They're not good, but I do love them.
Oh, Brendan, they're good. Come on.
Anyway,
so you wanted to talk about the enactment a little bit too, right?
Yeah. So it's cool. So I was working this summer at a summer camp. On our day off, we were like, we want to go see this Civil War reenactment that's right, like, 5 minutes away from where we are. We're like, all right, let's go take a look. So basically we get there, it's in Duncan Mills. We get there and there's a bunch of different tents out. They have a bunch of different vendors that you can buy stuff from, but nobody cares about them. We want to watch the battle. We pull up, and like, we hear cannons going off. As we get out of the car, we're like, oh, did we miss the start of the battle? Is it going? Maybe they're just doing target practice. And then we're like, they just keep going. We're like, no, I think we missed the start of the battle. So we like, hurry up, buy our ticket, get in. And it's just like constant bombardment. You have cannons like on two corners. Basically, they're not actually reenacting real battles. They're just doing, you know, just pseudo battles of just like, I mean, because, you know, they're not in any of the real locations. So, surprise, surprise, there were no Civil War battles fought in California. So,
they did extend pretty far west, though. Like, there were some in New Mexico, which is pretty wild, in Texas. Yeah.
But, you know, we were in California.
Not that far west. Yeah, totally.
So, they have all of these battles going off, and then at the end of the battle, we end up basically they're saying like, everyone go check out the camps because a lot of these Civil War reenactors stay overnight in these locations, and so they build camps, and so we go take a look at the Confederate camp first. That's where I hear about all of the weird amputation practices, which is just absurd. Like a quick rundown of that was like, first they like, say they're amputating your arm, first they cut out like some skin flaps, then they cut all the way down to the bone, like push all that muscle out, they cut through the bone, then and then, you know, when your muscle isn't attached to anything, it then wants to sling back because it's, you know, being pulled taut.
Right.
So then they use these, like, weird hook contraptions to, like, pull your muscles back into place. It was just incredibly, I mean, like, they didn't actually have demonstrations of this. Like, they just showed you the tools that they did use, obviously. They didn't have, like, a dummy or anything. And then they, like, use that, try and get it all into place, and then they use those skin flaps that they had cut earlier from your skin that they were going to cut off. They use it to then create the nub.
Oh.
And then it, like, heals over and everything.
Do you think they forgot to do that the first time?
Like, when they were trying to amputating
when
the first
they were figuring
arm.
Out how to do it, do you think they forgot to leave the skin flap?
Well, they probably did it without the skin flap, and then they were like, oh, that's not working.
I mean, amputations existed for quite a long time. before the Civil War.
But this sounds like a particular, maybe perfected process. I'm just saying, things go
through. Perfected changes. As to much of the, like, what you could do in the Civil War, because there were a lot of people that died from, like, disease as well from getting their limbs amputated and everything.
Yeah, it's not, none of, I bet all of the places in which they were amputating legs and arms there during the Civil War, not ideal places to get amputated.
In terms of
environment.
One of the interesting things was, as I talked about this a little bit earlier, with the whole, like, the Union had more money. So, as I said, we went to go talk to the Confederacy first, because, to be honest, they were closer. Their camp was closer to where we were.
Absolutely.
And so we go and talk to them, and they were, like, they used, like, horse hair as, like, the threads, and then they, you know, stitch things up with horse hair.
Oh, sure.
Then we went to go talk to the Union, and they were saying, yeah, we used real thread because we had more money. So there were a lot of trade-offs to where, like, people would use horse hair because it's what they had, but then the Union would use other things because it, you know, they're more sanitary, they have more money.
So that
was really cool. We talked to a bunch of different groups about, like, we learned why a lot of the people, you know, were a part of the Confederacy. A lot of people were saying that, like, you know, my grandfather fought in this war. That was a big thing. None of them actually seemed like they were like, yeah, we agree with the ideals of the people who fought in the Civil War for the South.
Of course. Yeah. Totally.
None of the, I mean, in this day and age, there's no way that you could actually, you know, seem like that would be you, because, you know, you'd get ridiculed and you would, you'd be called a racist and, you know, left and right.
I kind of wish that was true. It's pretty savage these days, actually.
I know. Spoilers on Black Klansman. The very end of that movie, incredibly powerful. I
believe it.
I thought you had seen it because you had talked about it, but I guess you have not. So.
No, I just want to.
We should all go see this now.
You guys should all go see it. It's very good.
The bunkers should all go on a field trip and see this.
Obviously, this is not in the same time of the Civil War, but, you know, it might as well. It could have been.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
It takes place in the 60s, right? 1960s?
What? Yeah, it's 1960s. Yeah. It's about 100 years after the Civil War.
Right, yeah.
So then we go over and we talk to the Union side, and we're talking to them. One of the big questions of Civil War reenactments specifically, is, you know, like, you know, everyone has their rifles and everyone's shooting blanks. Well, the question is, how do you decide when to die? Because, like, you don't get hit with anything. You just, you know, firing blanks at each other. How do you decide to die? One of the things that they were saying was there's two decisions, like, when you choose to die. Decision one, your commanding officer, because they have commanding officers in Civil War reenactments. Basically, you have somebody in charge, and they, you know, like, all right, you know, we're supposed to lose this battle. We're taking, we haven't taken enough hits. I need you to take a hit. And the spectators are so far away from actually, you know, being close to them, so they can't hear them. So you can, you know, yell whatever you want and it would be fine. But they're like, you know, we need to take some hits. Going into it, there were two battles that day when we showed up. And they were basically one battle the North is supposed to win and one battle the South is supposed to win. Although after the first battle, we were like, all right, who won the battle? No one could tell me who. They were like, I don't know. I think it was the North. And then we go talk to North and they're like, yeah, I think it was the South. So I don't know. But anyway, so that is reason one to die, or like when to die.
How you get to die. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Nothing. Go ahead.
Okay. Two, the other reason to die, you go through all of your ammunition. So you just fire. Yeah, so you just fire off all your shots that you got, and then you just die because you can't do anything else because you don't have any more ammunition. So you just die.
Yeah, that's fair. That's a fair assumption.
There were so like when we were watching the second battle, I went to go watch this this battle with a bunch of my friends from the summer camp. Unfortunately, a lot of them were very young. And so they were like being the obnoxious loud group, and we sat right in the front. So they were like cheering on as if it was like a sporting event, as if it was like a football event. Right in front of the crowd section that we were in, there was a kid, and like apparently, in order to be part of the reenactment, you have to be 6 years or older. I believe it was six. To hold a rifle, you have to be 12 years or older. Those numbers might be different, but off the top of my head, that's what I remember. And so there's like, it looks like it's like this 12, 13 year old kid. Like, it looks like he's been shot and he's like limping and he's like really trying to make his way. And he's trying to like reconvene with the rest of the group. But they're like nowhere to be seen. They're like very far away. And he stumbles a little bit and then gets back up and he's like really going. And we start cheering him on. We're like, yeah, come on, you got it. Go get him, kid.
Totally.
Don't die. You got this. Like he loses his hat in the battle. And he continues. Eventually, another company sees him. And they like run over to come help him and everyone cheers and it's hilarious. Because like there's this kid who is just having the longest prolonged death ever. And then survives. Because, like, this went on for, like, 2 or 3 minutes of this kid, like, slowly, like, limping and falling down to, like, a knee. And then,
really
like, using his rifle to get back up. Oh, man. Oh, man. It was so funny. That kid was MVP right there.
That sounds really sweet.
Yeah. Yeah. It was loads of fun. We actually made it over to the Union, and we talked about potentially participating. Unfortunately, we showed up probably about 45 minutes too late, because they would have actually got us on the field, because they have, like, loaner equipment. They would have got us on the field if we showed up probably about 45 minutes earlier, because we had to, like, fill out some paperwork and everything. But the group that we were talking to was the 20th Maine Company. They have something like 50 people, like, in their group. And they have these... like Civil War reenactments, like year round, and like it is all over the place, and yeah, I mean it was really cool. They were really interested in having us fight for them. They were like, yes, we want more people. If we have more people, like one of the girls there was like, yeah, if we have more people, we'll beat the Union, or sorry, we'll beat the South, we'll beat the Confederacy. And she was like, yes, more people, more recruits. And we were like, we were saying, yeah, I mean, you know, we come from a summer camp nearby. We have about 60 people on staff. And she was like, 60? We can get 60 more people? And she was like very excited. And we were like, hold on. There's no way that you have this much spare equipment lying around. And two, there's no way that we could get every person on staff to come here on one of their weekends to come be part of the Civil War reenactment.
She had a victory in mind. That is she all did. She could had, see when you said 60.
She very much
she
had victory
saw.
In mind. We were invited to go have dinner with them. Unfortunately, we didn't. But then we were also invited to come to basically the like barn dance. Basically, we were taught Civil War line dancing. So like Civil War era line dancing, we were taught that that night and everything. And it was, you know, I'm not a huge fan of line dancing. At least I wasn't going into it. But boy, oh boy, was it very, very fun.
Just the boot and scoot stuff, right?
There was a lot of twirling. You weren't always in a line. Sometimes you were in a circle. But it was a lot of fun. It was a great weekend, and I highly recommend anyone, if there's a Civil War reenactment in your area. The people are super nice. They're really interested in that time in history. I'm not super interested in the Civil War, but it did encourage me to look into some conspiracy theories related to that. It was super fun. Shout out to the 20th Maine for being so interested in having us on. You can visit their website. I want to say it's 20thmainecompanyg.com. We'll have it linked in the on the website. Yeah.
Cool.
Anything else you guys want to talk about?
I bet you were a dazzling dancer.
What?
I said, I bet you were a dazzling dancer.
I was better than some of the people that were there. So that's a plus.
Sounds like a good time all around.
Yeah, it was great. With that, I think we're going to end this episode of Mulder Was Right. If you guys like this podcast, you guys can find all of our other episodes on your podcast host of choice. I don't think we're on Spotify yet. I was working on that. I'll try and get us back on Spotify. But anyway, you can find us on our website, MulderWasRight.wordpress.com. Send us an email. Our email is MulderWasRightCast@gmail.com. Social media, which we rarely update because we're all busy people and are not social media savvy, at MWRCast at Facebook and Twitter. Leave us a voicemail. Voicemail number will be in the description, in the show notes.
Has anyone left us a voicemail yet?
So I told a couple people at the camp, and there were a couple people who sent a voicemail. I don't know if we're going to feature it because it's not incredibly on topic, nor is it actually. Like, they were like, yeah, I want you to do something related to, I mean, it was a while since I've listened to it, but it was like something related to like Superman, and there was like a Hitler reference, and I don't know. I don't know. We'll play it next episode just to play it, but we probably won't talk about it.
Okay.
But yeah, you too can have your voicemail featured on our podcast if you guys call in. Anyway, guys, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Wake up, sheeple!
What in the hell happened?